Hey, this is Jeff Keith from Tesla, and you're listening to Metal from the Inside with Sidney Taylor.
You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I have a guest today that I am so excited about. If you know me, you know how much I love Tesla, and especially this guy that I have on the phone right now, frontman for the band Tesla, Mr. Jeff Keith. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come on, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks, Sidney. I'm very excited to be talking with you, and so thank you for welcoming me.
Yeah. So first, I know that you guys are finally kind of back out on the road doing a bunch of shows, kind of full swing again since the start of the pandemic. So how has that been for you to be back, you know, after such a long break the last couple years?
Oh, my gosh. 18 months, just the bottom of the barrel fell out all the way around the world. And then we're back to work now and it's feeling good. Yeah, putting some food on our family's tables and having fun doing it.
Yeah. You guys just recently, too, which I was very excited to see, it was only a couple days ago, you guys just played a brand new song called Time to Rock live a couple of days ago, which is it's a great song, first off. So congratulations on that one. But what made you guys want to play that live the other night?
Well, first of all, we wanted to play it live for our hometown crowd. We played Thunder Valley, which is like right down the street from our houses and stuff in Sacramento, actually Lincoln, California. But we wanted to play it for our hometown crowd first because it's not coming out as being released until August. So we thought we'd play it for our hometown crowd, and we just are having so much fun with it. We're playing it for every crowd, some new material, and we're excited about that. You know, Tesla, we're old dogs, but we still like to write new stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think at this point in your career too, you know, when you were first kind of getting onto the scene and, you know, you had to come out with a certain amount of records and, you know, you had to be on the touring circuit and, you know, you had to have something out, you know, pretty frequently. But nowadays, you know, you can actually take the time to write what you want to write. And, you know, it's more of a passion project instead of a, you know, we have to get something new out there eventually.
Yeah. Well, you know, because sometimes being as far back as we are, you can just go out and play your catalog from, you know, 86 to whatever it may be. But we like to throw new stuff in there. We just like to write songs. So it's fun to have a new single. And actually, we have another single that was put out, gosh, last August or whenever, and it was Cold Blue Seal. And it's actually still doing something in like classic rock charts or something. I don't know. But yeah, so it's good to have stuff that we're writing, and it's actually doing a little something, you know?
Yeah, and what I love about these two songs, you know, like you said, Cold Blue Steel and then Time to Rock, they're actually the first Tesla songs that you guys have ever self-produced, which is pretty cool.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that. You're right.
Yeah,
Frank produced this last one, and I think he's definitely in well-deserved getting the producer credits for it. And did a fantastic job, and we all did and have fun with it. And that's the thing, Sidney, we're still having fun. The day they take the fun away from it, I'm just the guy they hand the microphone to. I don't want them to hand the microphone to me if we're not having fun anymore and we're having a blast.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've always loved about your shows is that the energy that you guys have is totally palpable. You know, we can see that you guys are having just as much fun as the audience is, which I think is what, aside from the fact that you have so many, you know, songs and so many albums that have played, you know, such a role in so many people's lives, is what, you know, keeps people coming back for more. So I can totally see that from the performances you guys have put on.
Well, that's great that you can feel that because in all honesty, we're having a great time. We start with that. We're playing music from the heart. And then when the people go, oh, they're having fun, and they're having fun. And then it's full circle because they're feeding off of us, we're feeding off of them, and it's just a wonderful time. And we're very fortunate that almost, you know, all but maybe a few here and there that coming off, and everybody's excited. They're just like, ah, that was fun.
Something, too, that I think is so interesting is, you know, kind of touching on that, like you said, you know, you guys are still out there because, you know, you're having such a blast doing this. And, you know, it's been, you know, over 30 years. And I know that you had mentioned in an interview a little while back that, you know, you never really envisioned yourself being a singer, let alone, you know, a singer in a band like Tesla, you know, 30 years later. Is it crazy for you to be like, wow, this is where I'm at right now in my life? I never imagined it.
Are you kidding? My life story is when I lived in Northern California in a little, you know, population 900 town, Georgetown, California. Then at 11 years old, moved to Oklahoma, lived there for 6 years, graduated high school in 76, bicentennial, majoring in FFA 1, 2, and 3, came back to Northern California, drove a truck for septic tank. I know on the inner sleeve it says giant mountain, you know, concrete truck, but we poured our own concrete and made our own, you know, septic tanks and then poured them and then hauled them. And at 23 years old, if you were to be asking me something like, what are you gonna do with the rest of your life, I'd go, well, I'm gonna keep my brakes adjusted and I'm gonna try to keep these 18 wheels rubber side down. And then at 24, I auditioned after doing a Sammy Hagar thing, you know, your love is driving me crazy. And I did that song, won $200 down in Sacramento. And then these two girls that knew Brian and Frank that used to live at Georgetown, lived down in Sacramento. They knew their singer was quitting that night. And they got me. They said, come down, we'll get you to sit in with them. And that was my audition. And I knew nothing about microphones and all this, and the mic was squealing and all that, but I went over to share the mic with Frank, and Frank told B-Dub, because Brian Wheat says, I don't know, this guy knows nothing about nothing, and Frank goes, he knows nothing about nothing, but he came over to share the mic with me, and he sang in my ear, and he's our guy. So, you know, and then that's how I got in the band. So I'm what, like when people that Finding Nemo, I'm like the turtles, catch the drip, dude. And I caught the drift. I was 24 when I joined the band, 28 when our first record came out.
Oh, my gosh. It's incredible. I mean, when you were younger, did you, I mean, I know you said that you went and you won that contest, but when you were younger, did you ever sing at all? Was it anything that you did for fun that you, I mean, you didn't think you'd make a career out of it, but did you just kind of do it for fun when you were younger?
Well, of course, we sang along to the radio, and then we sang along to a lot of 8-track tapes, but never thought anything like that. Small town in Oklahoma, back to small town in California, Northern California. And I never would have thought in my wildest dreams I was going to grow up and be the guy they hand the microphone to, you know? So it's amazing that we didn't have magazines. We didn't have a radio station that came in. So when I first joined the band in 83, I had to know top 40, and I'm like, top 40 of what? And they're like, of radio. And I'm like, well, we don't get a radio station up in town where I grew up. So I didn't know nothing about top 40, but it all worked out, and it's still working.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have had just such an incredible, you know, career. And, you know, looking back on Tesla's legacy and, you know, the records that you put out, you know, all the really, you know, notable ones that fans always go back to, you know, Mechanical Resonance, A Great Radio Controversy. You know,
yeah.
Is there any specific record? I mean, I know, I'm sure that they're all pretty memorable to you when it comes to recording them, but is there any that you look back on it and you're like, man, that was just such an incredible time?
You know what I'll say? Because the first two records, you know, you have producers, A&R people, Tom Jutott, people like that, Michael Barriero and Steve Thompson were the producers. And, you know, we did the first record, and they say you got your whole life to write that one. Then we did the second one. People would talk about Sophomore Jinx. Uh-oh, we didn't go. We're not schoolboys. We did the second record. Next, you know, Love Song is like our only top 10 single, because Signs became a top 10 single when we did Five Man Acoustical Jam, but that was a total accident. So we never thought about writing anything, hits or anything. We were always told write songs from the heart, because that might be all you have. You might have two people or half drunk out there in the crowd, but write songs from the heart. and you will, you know, appreciate that. And then if something happens, great. And something happened, and things took off for us. And so I'd say Psychotic Supper, because that was the third record. So now this is where we did kind of some crazy stuff, because we were like, ah, we're starting to figure out who we are, because the first two records, you're kind of still figuring out kind of who you are, you know? So Psychotic Supper was the one where it's like, oh, yeah, we're doing stuff like, put this in your pipe and smoke it! Stuff like that, you know?
And it's funny that you mention, you know, Five Man Acoustical Jam. I'm actually, I live in Philadelphia, which is where I am right now, and it's so sad because the Trocadero, unfortunately, closed a couple of years ago.
I know.
Which breaks my heart. Every time I listen to that album, I'm like, oh, my gosh. It's so upsetting that it closed.
I know. It is very upsetting. But those things happen. But by golly, before it closed, we sure got a nice recording of just live from top to bottom. In 1990, we were on tour with Motley Crue, had a couple nights off. We played, like, you know, Boston, New York City, Philadelphia, and so maybe Detroit. I can't remember all five of them. But at any rate, we said, oh, this is feeling so good. The guys, I know nothing about this stuff. They went, we should bring a 24-track mobile truck down. And we forgot we even recorded that show. 3 months later, me and Tommy and Frank go to radio station, play signs. Phones are ringing off the hook. Real phones. Not that we're not talking on real phones now, but, you know, phones that were, like, ringing off the hook. And Geffen Records says, we have a whole evening of this. And next, you know, we put it out, and that's our biggest record, biggest selling record to this point. It sold like 2 million records, and it was just live top to bottom.
You guys essentially started the whole, MTV Unplugged thing that eventually happened. You know, you guys were pretty up there, a catalyst for that.
Well, people say that, but we're not try and take credit for that. It was like really just like we just recorded and forgot all about it, and then played it signs, and the next you know it's a single, and they put it out the record, and it's completely live. And so we didn't really I don't think we get the pioneer credits for just starting it, but it was close to that time. Yeah,
I'll give you the pioneer credits.
Oh, thank you, Sydney.
But I mean, you know, like I said, you guys are back on the road, which is so exciting and so great. And, you know, I know that over the last couple of years, you guys have, you know, changed the set list a little bit, added some stuff in here and there, you know, of course, from the past records. I mean, for you guys, what is the process of, you know, you have those songs, you have to put them in, you have to have Love Song, you have to have, you know, Modern Day Cowboy.
Right.
But what is the process for you guys of going, you know what, we're going to take out a song, we're going to do a deep cut from, you know, the Great Radio Controversy, et cetera?
See, now, you have an hour and a half if you have a headline set. So it's very difficult picking what songs, but there are staple songs. You mentioned them, like Modern Day Cowboy, Love Song. We got to play these songs, Signs, you know, oh, my gosh, people love Little Susie to this day. There's certain songs that we call staple songs, you know, like Heaven's Trail, you know, so, and then we swap things around with the other songs, you know, like we might play like Paradise on one for a couple, few nights, and then we'll say, all right, let's change it up and let's play, let's play Hang Top, and then we'll maybe take that out, put, Breaking Free from Forevermore. So, I mean, it can be tough putting a set list together, because when you have so many records picked from, and then you want to change it up a little bit after, you know, four or five shows. And so sometimes we do what we call as pull a rabbit out of the hat. That's our term we like to use. Let's pull a rabbit out of the hat and let's play this song.
If you ever have to pull a rabbit out of the hat again, one of my favorite Tesla songs is Lady Luck off of the Great Radio Controversy.
You know what? We're talking about that. We've been practicing that because we love it. Jump, whoop, 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 whoop.
It's so good.
Yeah. So we're working that up. So you know what? Hopefully you'll be at the show, or you'll at least hear about it. We're going to be pulling Lady Luck. We've been kind of practicing it at sound checks and stuff.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. That is one, the last couple times I've seen you guys, I'm like, oh, maybe they'll pull it out. And, I've seen recordings from, you know, kind of back in the day, 89, that you guys did it. So I'm so glad to hear that that's in the works.
Yeah, see, well, because when you go out, like when we first went out with Dave Lee Roth, Alice Cooper, And then we went out and did the Texas Jam and a rent-a-car tour. Then we got on with Hysteria with Def Leppard.
Yeah.
For 14 months. That was great. And you have your first record. So everything you're playing is off first record. Well, when you get the next time around, we get to pull some songs off of Great Radio Controversy. And so now you have two records to pick from. And Lady Luck was right there in the set almost every night.
Mentioning Def Leppard, I mean, you guys have gone on tour with them, you know, a lot over the last couple of years because, you know, they're kind of like your big brothers almost. I know you guys have a really close relationship with all
they
of them.
They really are.
How has that been, you know, just... I mean, like you said, you guys have done a bunch of different sets with them, you know, I want to say over the last, you know, decade. Is it just, you know, when you guys go out, is it just like, yeah, we're like family? It feels very familiar.
You know what? They really are big brothers. They took us under their wings on the Hysteria tour, and we look up to them to this day and always will. They are our big brothers, and we really are like that close, and we're like family, and they've treated us just like we're their little brothers, and we're like, oh, man, you're our big brothers. And they've always taken great care of us. When we went out and did the Hysteria tour, that was in the round. And they let us go use the whole stage. It's in the round, the middle of, you know, the center of the arena. And it was fantastic, you know. So they always let us do whatever we wanted. They weren't the kind of band to go, cut them on this, cut them on that, so they sound smaller than us. They just went, go out big. And then they go out, Def Leppard, you can't top Def Leppard, in my eyes, one of my all-time favorite bands. And so for our big brothers just to say, do your thing, we'll go out and do our thing, and we want the entire show to be great. Because sometimes, every once in a while, when you're an opening band, the headliner can go, well, you don't get this and you don't get that. They gave us everything, which means, you know, like, just go out and give it your best. And so, just like big brothers, go out there, little brothers, and do your best. And that's what we did. And just, we were so fortunate to do 14 months, the entire Hysteria tour. It's like, oh my God. So now, we're as a matter of fact, we made a record with Phil Collins.
Yeah, Shock, in 2019, right?
Shock. Yeah, and that was fun doing that. And we had a blast. And so, yeah, they've always treated us just the best.
Yeah, a funny story. When I was, you know, really getting into music when I was younger, I was very big into Def Leppard, and you know, massive. I they were one of my favorite bands, and my dad, he was like, you know, you really like Def Leppard. I have a band that I think you're really gonna like, and he had handed me the Great Radio Controversy, and I was
wow.
Oh man. So it definitely.
All right. Well, that's awesome, Sydney. So that's great. And so, yeah, so you said your dad told you about us, and you said, let me give it a listen, and you like it, and you still like it. That's what you're saying?
Yes, of course.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, Time to Rock was just, you know, you guys played that live. Is there, I know Cold Blue Stool, like you said, last August. Is there any future full-length record in the works that we can look forward to?
Well, you know what? Right now, the way things work, you see, it's kind of, the guys were explaining to me, because usually that's all you did was made a record, you know?
Right.
And since I've been in the band, they go, well, now... with, you know, social media or whatever you call it, Spotify, whatever the names are. I don't go on the internet, but it's a wonderful tool to have, like, these iPhones, and you can release a single without making a record. So far, we're just put out some singles, but probably in the next year, you know, no more than 2 years, we're going to go and say, let's make a whole record again, you know? But right now, it's very convenient because you can just download a single, and the guys were explaining to me, they go, Jeff, it's just like back when, you know, when the Beatles or before that, when people, you know, would put out a single on a 45 record, right? And they wouldn't, like Hank Williams, he'd do something live and just put it out as a single. Back in the day, they used to just put out singles. And then, of course, they would do records, too. So that's what we're kind of in that mode. And now, instead of it being on a 45 record, it's on a digital form that you can have people download. I don't know. That's the best I can understand it.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you said, the internet, it's, you know, people's attention spans are very short.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's crazy how the music industry has changed. It's insane when it comes to things like Spotify and streaming services. And it's like, you know, they're right of like you release a single and, you know, by the time if it does end up on the new record, you know, it's given people time to listen to it, et cetera. They're very familiar with it. It's, you know, it's
right.
People these days, they, you know, if it's more than 10 songs, it's like, yeah, you know, it's which is a shame. I wish it was not like that, but.
Well, it's called streaming. I know. And see, I'm like old school. I sit next to a stream and like to hear the water running by, but streaming means these days means, I don't know, you're downloading something live or whatever it works.
Yeah, you don't necessarily, yeah. That's the thing about streaming too, is that you don't necessarily own it. So it's like, you know, if the big corporation takes it off the streaming service, and you don't own it, I mean, you're kind of SOL, you know, you don't own it. So
I don't understand all that stuff, but
yeah.
I do know the stuff that we put out, we wrote or we covered, you know, because we, you know, what is it called? Real to Real. That was fun, you know, doing a bunch of cover songs and stuff that we cut our teeth on and everything. And that was the first record we did with Dave Root, who joined the band, and we did it in Tornillo, Texas, and it was great. And we had so much fun with it, we only meant to do one CD, and we went, oh my gosh, we got so many songs, we can't fit them all on one. Let's make it a two-disc, you know, record. And so we did a Reel to Reel, a two-disc record, whatever you call it, like with Jeff. It's still called a record. But, yeah, so, you know, we start out as a cover band. Don't all bands usually start out as cover bands? And next thing you know, you're doing your own thing. But we're just having fun with it, Sydney. Whatever we're doing, we're having fun with it. And that's what really counts.
Oh, 100%. And like I said, you can totally tell in not only the live shows, but, you know, everything that you release. So I, you know, give major credit to you guys for, you know, recognizing that yourselves and still, you know, doing such a fantastic job.
Well, thank you, Sydney.
Absolutely. I am so excited for the release of Time to Rock. I believe that's coming out in late July. And, everybody, please be sure to go check out, again, Cold Blue Steel that came out last year. And, Jeff, it was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so, so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Sydney. Once again, appreciate your time. And all right, rock and roll, everybody.